All right, everybody, welcome to our weekly get-together this week. It is a webinar, and I apologize for the late notice. We realized as we were just testing the technology again for the screen share on the actual documents that we'll be going through, we realized that it was just a little touchy to be able to show our screen for a recording. So when we're just recording audio on the Uber conference, we weren't getting the actual screen, which in this case, as we review this, we want to capture a good recording for everybody. So real quick, we're just going to go through real quick. Number one, we got some announcements we'll go through. Then we're going to actually tap into the Guernsey Lane, Dallas, Texas deal that we've talked about. It's coming to a head, so I want to give you guys an update. Plus, I want to kind of deconstruct it again and look into it and get a feel for some of the things Sabrina was able to teach us a little bit late, but better late than never, and things that we can learn for the next modification that we'll work on. I think you guys will get a lot of value out of that. And as part of this whole process, really, you know, what story did the credit report tell and what story is it telling us today? If you were to take this particular loan on as you approached a workout with them. So anyway, and then last but not least, we will talk just a little bit about an opportunity that hopefully you guys, we want to be able to feature you guys as much as possible at our NIS Live event coming up in February as the go-getters and the doers, but just an opportunity that you have to help share the love. We did a Black Friday. Some of you are on the list. You guys might have seen that promotion. It was very good. We had, I think the final numbers came in just right around 25 new registrants for NIS Live. So we're very excited about that. That pushed us up over 106 or 107. And just so you guys know, that's right around, we had just about 122 come in June. So we're very excited about that, and we've still got 85, 84 days, and the countdown to the summit continues. So we'll talk about that in a minute. So just let's jump into announcements real quick. If you guys are hoping to attend with us this next week, come bring some of your files, work on some systems, anything, any really that's it's going to be open season on Thursday from 1 to 6, and Sabrina, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Just talk really quick about, you know, some of the things we want to accomplish with this mastermind session. There's so many different directions. We are going to leave it open and flexible. I know some people asked about some Google Docs stuff that they would like to see in a more informal setting on, you know, how we get answers quickly when we need them from our portfolio. Until we actually move into a full-blown loan management servicing software. But talk about that really quick before we talk about the workshop itself.
The mastermind session will be an open forum where you have your problem files, some things that you may think, some things you may have questions about, where you'll be able to address your concerns, have any questions answered, have a second eye look at some things, and maybe point you in a different direction on where you think your file is going or where you thought it was going. And just basically help you manage your portfolio better and to be wise about the decisions that you're making. And I really want to stress about spending and be cost effective in the things that you're doing to managing your assets.
Very, very good. Thank you so much for that. The other thing I wanted to add to that, which I think is very powerful, and that is if you guys prepare and come with your phone numbers, there may be a chance that you might catch some of your other time zones. If we want to make a couple of calls, and some of you guys, I have had some of the biggest breakthroughs in making calls on real estate investment deals that were in distress, you know, just in a group setting. You know, it's almost something where we were kind of spurred on by each other. And we'll give a little time if somebody wants to make a few calls there. It's entirely up to you, but we can. So it is an open forum, and we'll be able to do that. So this is just for co-investor group members. So please take advantage of that if you're able to be there. We'd love to have you. I know it's close to the holidays, but and then let's also mark your calendars. I actually don't have it down here, but I wrote it in the email. We'll be getting together again the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. Time for those of you that were there, we did have 42 people there, and it was a great turnout. And I think that was a little larger than maybe our, who knows, maybe our monthly meetings will be that. But what we're hoping is to keep it to between 30 and 35, you know, anywhere in that range. So we'll start Friday and Saturday, 9 to 5. And people say, well, what are you covering that you haven't covered before? And in every single one of these, we have new case studies all the time, right, just based on what we're working on at the time. And then this particular one, if there's any interest in looking at other fundraising, you know, capital raising strategies and structures and kind of the legal aspects of that, that will be very beneficial for you to come, in addition to what Sabrina and Aaron and I will be going through. Jillian Sidoti will be there. And we do have we've asked Matt Kelly whether it'll be at this particular workshop or in January. He's got a special, couple of real special things he's been doing, and I think it's going to be very beneficial for him to pass that on. And I know some of you guys might see him here locally, and we can pick his brain a little bit. He's doing some pretty creative stuff to get some payoffs, and we hope, and we hope you get a whole lot out of this. When it comes to non-performing junior liens, you'll know that the exit is through the borrower versus on a non-performing first mortgage. It's typically through the actual property itself. The borrower is obviously a big part of that, but in many cases, it's just you have a lot different exit than you would maybe on a non-performing junior lien. So it's very important. The credit report, you know, when you think of the different data points that you're thinking about in terms of, you know, what's the most important part of your due diligence, Gordon this, but several other people I've talked to, they say the credit report, the credit report, the credit report. It's just it's a big deal when it comes to these assets and trying to look at different things. So I'm going to just really quick, just to set this up one more time before I turn over to Sabrina. A lot of you have heard me present the top 10 mistakes we've made, and, you know, obviously trying to keep that down to 10 mistakes was difficult. But, you know, this one here, it's right there. It was a mistake number 4 in our last presentation we did. But this, I want you guys, as we go through this, you're going to analyze someone's credit report, right? We're going to go through that. Sabrina's going to give us lots of gold nuggets on how to do just that. But I feel like what you're really looking for, right, on that credit report, in addition to the actual evaluation of the property itself and taking a look at it, you're looking for that emotional equity. And so we're going to review this particular credit report of this homeowner on this particular asset. And a lot of you guys will remember this property. This is a picture from Aaron's iPhone. So don't get all in a tizzy about the bad quality, but the shadows were there. It was just, we literally were on route to catch a flight back to San Diego there by Love Field in Dallas. And we door knocked this house. And as many of you will remember, and this house, when you look at it, these people were not going anywhere. We wish we could have had a great conversation with them, but, you know, it ended up having to be a situation where we had to initiate foreclosure after, and Monica can correct me, but I think we had at least 11, between 11 and 12 contacts to, you know, just between mail, phone, actual physical door knock, and just nothing. They weren't responding back to us. And the minute that we turned it over to Trustee Corps, you know, now it was on. The popcorn started popping, as we say here in the office. So let's just review really quick that are on the call. We've got some new members that have joined since our last couple of calls that we've done. So welcome to them, and we'll do a formal introduction next week in our member spotlight to two of the members that are brand new, and we'll continue to do that from there on. So fair market value of the property once we purchased the second lien was $725,000 fair market value today, and that's probably even gone up. But the first lien there, so you can see it was just at par, and it had been modified The loan had been modified, and we're going to go through that credit report. People say, well, how do you know it's been modified? And Sabrina's going to share with us a couple of ways to tell that. The second lien, that's what it was based on the last pay date. So some of these things we'll actually be able to verify via the credit report. And that's where we're pulling a lot of these actual numbers from. So the arrearages and lates, which we'll get into as well, you know, that was well over $100,000. And we paid based on our pool level pricing. Okay, for this asset, we paid $19,330. So the workout, now this is what we ended up doing, and Sabrina had come in just after we had already pushed some numbers across the table, or across the virtual table, if you will, via email over to our borrowers. And so there's a certain things that we couldn't pull back, but this is where we were. So we agreed on the workout. They said they had 20 grand coming in. And as some of you remember, they actually had 25 and had already put this number out, and we intercepted a correspondence between them. And for some reason, we ended up with it, but it was a fax between them. Way without having us put 20K down right now. I guess they needed the money back then. But anyway, here's how it turned out. So we did gave them a couple options. We wanted to have them, we presented a settlement option for $89,000 and change, which they really wanted to take, but only had $20,000. Okay, and so one thing, you know, as the conversations led on, they said, well, you know, we really want this settlement offer, and come December 15th, we're going to have some stock options come due. This guy's an international pilot for the international captain for American Airlines. For those of you, this is the first time seeing this case study. But anyway, this is what ended up happening. They wanted that. They didn't have the full money. They wanted to do it in a couple chunks, so they offered to even pay a penalty. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people when they say they're going to do something. Oh, sorry, it says connection is cutting in and out. So hopefully, can someone just give me here real quick? Just let me know that they're hearing me okay. Everything okay still?
It's good.
It's good. Okay, good. Thank you. So just jumping back in here, one of the things we've done, whenever you've negotiated something with someone or they say they're going to do something, you're not quite sure. And so in this case, I thought, well, why don't we roll them into one of the permanent loan modification options and just see if they indeed do what they say, we'll give them that option. And that's what that line number four there is. It's a one-time lump sum settlement option, and they have till year end to do that. And so I set the payoff, that 60% of the unpaid principal balance per the amortization schedule at the time of payoff. You'll see that that was going to come in right at $72,000, which my original offer of 89 and change, right? So we basically tacked on there, you know, about $2,100, $2,200. So we with that at the time, and I really didn't know if they were going to pay, but that monthly payment of $723.75, they've made it 4 months straight. They UPS'd it. And so that's where we're at. So really, here's just some quick numbers to give you a little bit of background before we jump into the credit report, and I'll pull that up. But it was very quick. We didn't have to go to the full sale, obviously. They wanted to take care of this. So just that initial process with the trustee to get that all going, that was our cost. That included some of our mailings and our efforts there to get them to call. So all in, there's our number, just above 21,000. And our initial deposit plus the first month is what they sent in with the loan modification agreement. It took a little, and I just want to add this in there before turning it over to Sabrina, but that $20,000, one of the things that our loan modification did not go into detail on, which we've since adjusted, and that was they wanted to know how that $20,000 broke down. And that was a real big sticking point for them. And so we the two attorneys that kind of finished it off at the end, and we actually put an addendum in there on that this particular deal to help them show. And there's a lot of flexibility in how you guys, what you show that $20,000 can be applied to. So there's our net in the deal. And, I get pushback on the 175% cash on cash return every month. It says, is that really how you analyze this? And that's how I analyze it. You know, there's other ways to analyze it. There's, in terms of returns. But that was just something. These guys are so far away from even getting close to what I had in the deal. You know, I just wanted to look at that. So now, yesterday, I'm in just finishing up a meeting, and we actually had one of our new members in our office yesterday, and Monica comes in and played a fresh voicemail, which was just great, and it was actually the borrower's wife. Yeah, they're both on the loan, but they came in and said, hey, hopefully you got our payment. We sent in that last payment, which I thought was interesting, and we would definitely like to start getting the paperwork ready, you know, for this payoff coming up. So here it is, the start of December, and, you know, the stock options are supposedly coming in December 15th. So if everything turns out the way we hope, this will, you know, actually we were figuring out on this particular pool, it'll carry about 15% of the whole portfolio just on this one settlement. So we're very excited. We're kind of crossing our fingers, knock on wood. But now what I want to do is turn this over to Sabrina, and we're going to go through the credit report. So, and I think that's about what we'll have time to
okay,
do today.
Okay, Sabrina.
And then we can potentially have part two.
So teach us. Take the reins here and talk to us.
And as you guys you know, have financials
about
and
a credit
stuff
report,
like that,
type those in
next to the chat box
next
there.
Training, our next
and we'll
training
keep
session.
This going
so,
on, and then we'll open it up for
this,
Q&A.
I just want to remind you guys,
end,
so as we jump into this, this is all private
kind of
information
with the frequency.
I know you guys know this.
You've all
signed an NDA
just take it from
with
there.
Capstone Funding Group. And I just want to
okay,
say this again.
The
when this actually gets recorded and
frequency.
Posted
I want you to know
in the
what
members
type of
area, it will have the names.
Or what
in fact,
type of
it might
report you're reviewing. Because,
I forgot I had John do that
generally,
before the call.
Even if you're reviewing
so you know, maybe
credit
it's a mood issue.
On a deal that you're about to purchase.
The NDA, but just please, this is private information. Don't pass this around. So let me just jump out of here real quick.
Or sometimes you'll see a merge or a tri-merge. And that means that there's more than one bureau actually pulling information to get you the report that you see in front of you. This report is actually a tri-merge report, which I probably think it's two different credit reporting agencies that's on here, but I don't know which two it is. Can Travis or Aaron tell me which two you guys are we're approved for?
You're cutting out a little bit there, Sabrina.
Can you tell me which two we're approved to pull for a tri-merge?
Okay, so on this particular one, it looks like we just have Experian and Monica's gonna chime in really quick.
It's an Experian report, but we are approved for Experian and TransUnion.
Okay, very good. So it's an Experian report and we're approved for TransUnion and Experian. I should probably, Monica, I'll just unmute you for this. So keep going.
Okay. and then make sure you'll see the borrower's name, the first and last name. You'll see the date of birth, and you'll see the Social Security number. I want you to pay very close attention to the current address. Make sure that the current address is actually our collateral. When you're reviewing the credit report, because any additional mailings, you would want to send that to that other address. The first section of the credit report is basically a summary of everything that you're going to find on the credit report in reference to real estate loans, installment loans, revolving lines of credit, and others. And others generally is any type of medical collections, any credit collections, sometimes even utilities or child support. You'll see other in the other column. And this particular report tells us that the borrower has, you know, over $700,000 in real estate transactions or real estate loans. Currently he has two, and he has three that's closed. He has nine installment accounts that's totaling about $21,000 with a monthly payment of $2,200. Revolving lines of credit, he has $6,200, roughly $124,000. His total debt is $750,000, and his monthly payments are about $7,800. That's a lot of money. and you try to figure how in the world could this person be delinquent on anything if they're able to afford $7,800 a month on this overall expenses. Sometimes you'll find what their available revolving credit is. And this particular report says that they have about 5% still available for revolving credit. Travis, could you move that up, please? So the other thing you'll see is you'll see number of inquiries. So they've had actual five inquiries over the last 2 years.
How would you rate that, Sabrina? Like, just in terms of, is that a high number, low number? Because it seems relatively low.
It's low, but if you go over five, it starts factoring in your behavior score, and it'll reduce your behavior score in the area of credit inquiries. Every time you have your credit pulled, it can affect your credit report by 7 to 21 points, depending on the inquiry. A hard pull. A soft pull really doesn't affect your credit report. The inquiry may show up, but it won't affect your credit score. And the next section, it'll tell you any public records. Public records will be any judgments, any tax liens, any foreclosure actions that's pending. It'll show up on the credit report, and I think this one actually shows on the back end of the report instead of up front. So we'll review that at the end of the report. And then you see historical delinquency count. It'll tell you when the mortgages were last delinquent or last reported delinquent, and it gives you the 30, 60, 90 bucket. And it tells you how many times the loan's been 30 days, how many times it's been 60 days, and how many times it's been 90 days. And they still break this down in category: real estate, installment, revolving, other. And then it totals it out, and it gives you the last delinquency date of the initial reporting of a loan being delinquent. If you move down, you'll see the credit score, and their credit score is 664. Well, they could qualify for a loan if property's not underwater. So I want you to make sure you look at the credit score. I want to kind of clear up some confusion, because I know some of you have ordered credit reports from us, and you're looking at the 38, the 10, the 18, the 14. Those are internal codes. That's not how many delinquencies that they have on the report. So those are internal codes for the credit bureaus that really don't mean anything. But what's important to you is what's driving your score down. Serious delinquent and public records or collections. And then the other one, the ratio of balance to limit, is basically they've actually maximized most of their credit cards. So that's something that's driving their score down. The number of delinquent accounts. The length of time accounts have been open. And there is a star by number of inquiries adversely affected score. So even though they've only had five in the last 2 years, based off of some of the other things, it's actually affected the credit report. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to move up.
Move back up or keep scrolling down?
Well, I'm sorry. Scroll down so I can see some more of the credit report. Okay, I'm sorry. So, again, to make sure you have the right credit report, it's giving you the borrower's name, the address. And the first loan you see is with Nation Star. And I want you to look over to the far right, and it started out as a 5. It went from a 5 to a 6, and then it went to a 1. And there was 4 months that the loan did not report. And the creditor has the right not to report a loan. So normally when you see those dashes with no numbers, that means that the creditor has chosen not to report on the bureau. It shows that the loan balance is over $600,000, but I want you to look at what the loan was. The loan balance was, which was originally $726,000. But the loan was modded, so we don't know if they did a principal reduction. I don't really believe that the borrowers has paid down that much on their loan. I believe that there was the loan mod actually adjusted the principal balance down. And until you actually see a copy of the loan mod, don't get excited, because there could be some documentation in the loan mod where if something were to happen, that balance would go back up. So unless we have a copy of the loan mod, we really shouldn't get excited, other than the fact that we know that they actually have had a loan mod and it's currently current right now and they're paying it. But the last time this was reported was for a 14. And because of the age of this credit report, we probably want to pull a new one if we weren't in communication and working things out with the borrower.
So, Sabrina, when you see balance there where it says 726,286, mm-hmm. One of the things that I started doing, and then, you know, Monica took the ball and ran with it. You've given her some great input. But is this just where you look to go dial into the automated system, because you have the date of birth and the borrower's social, and order a payoff just to confirm? Because typically that payoff, I mean, it's not set in stone, but that payoff, you could basically say, okay, this is my actual balance, right, that's owed?
Well, even going through the automated payoff, a lot of times there will be two different amounts on some of those payoffs on modded loans. I don't know if you have seen that, but Chase is notorious for it and the loan mods that they've done. And basically, they give two balances, and they give an asterisk by the balance, the lower balance, because basically you need to go back and refer to the loan mod to see how that's going to wash out or how that's going to be taken care of.
Gotcha. So you say an asterisk by the balance would show up on the credit report. Okay, gotcha. And then that's when you'd really want to do some digging and do your very best to get a copy of the loan modification on the first mortgage from your borrower.
That is correct.
Very good. Very good.
So then the next thing that you see a BMW. They're paying for their car, and it's a lease.
And it's not the small little BMW either.
That BMW payment is $924. And this is where you start looking at things on, if they can afford to make a $924 lease payment and they haven't made their mortgage payment, maybe they need to adjust their way of thinking and adjust their lifestyle to be able to stay in their home. So then you look at item number three, and there's another BMW Financial Services for $1,323. And that balance on that lease is $47,000. If I had been looking at this credit report, they would have got no breaks from me just based off of the first three things I saw on the credit report, unless they could really justify why they need to have two BMWs with payments over $2,000 a month. That is a choice. That's not a necessity to me. And if you look at all the time that they've been paying on this, that could have been money in your pocket as the banker.
And so just summarizing those first three items, so obviously the two car payments you've done for us, what about the mortgage? Because you mentioned just based on those top three items where they wouldn't have got a whole lot of breaks from you, tell me about what you see on the actual first mortgage and looking at that.
Well, they've already gotten a break on the first mortgage because it's been modified. They went, you know, they were down and they were able to recover. So that gives me the indication that they were able to recover, and I'm sure that they didn't get a bailout just based off of their overall expenses that we saw on the top of the credit report on what they're paying out a month. So this is, to me, this is a sophisticated borrower who has an image to uphold with the cars and there's no way they're getting ready to let this go into foreclosure. So I would have played hardball.
Okay, so let's just go to a couple of questions here. Sorry, guys, I had the chat box open instead of the question box and was saying, wow, I guess everyone's just getting this and they have no questions. But really quick from Gary, Sabrina, would you bring up the BMW payments to the borrower and what would you say to them?
Well, basically, I would have a conversation with them after I've looked at their financials and I've read their hardship letter. And I would say to them, you know, unfortunately, life happens, but it seems to be that these are choices and this isn't life circumstances. Could you foresee yourself going from two BMWs to one BMW if you still feel the need to drive a BMW if you want to keep your home?
Very good. Very good. Well, just while you're there on those questions with Gary, Gary's got one more. As a condition of working with the borrower on a modified second loan, right, can you get a copy of the modified first loan?
Well, part of your package is you're requesting an assigned borrower's authorization. You can request it from them, but if they don't give it to you and they give you the borrower's authorization, just go to the first and get it yourself.
Great answer. Great answer. So you could have it on your checklist of requirements, see if they submit it. If they don't, but they submit the borrower's authorization, then you got a little more extra work to do, but you can go track it down from the lender. Okay, very good. Very good. I think we got, let's just back up. Sorry, Gary, got to these questions late. But in terms of information provided in the report, what's the difference between the hard and soft pull? I understand the latter.
A hard pull is basically the borrower or the consumer looking for merchandise, looking to buy a loan, to buy merchandise, a vehicle, a house, something. A soft pull is for sometimes creditors or collection agencies who have the right to pull credit based off of money owed to them, and it just comes up as a soft inquiry, and it doesn't affect their score. So when you're establishing your ability to pull credit, you need to talk with the vendor in reference to what type of pull you need to be, so you can pull credit as frequently as you need to, and you don't hurt your borrowers to where they go to get refied. They can't because you've driven their score down by pulling their credit every 90 days to 6 months.
Very good. So that's something to really keep an eye out for. So great questions, you guys. And hopefully you can just see the questions tab on the side there and just type them right in, and your questions will show up. And I'll keep, just as we keep going here, we'll have those for you. So Gary just asked, does it have the same information?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Very good. Very good. All right. Just keep those questions coming as we get going. Here's a comment from Bill Rao. Dave Van Horn says, in your documentation note or deed, there is verbiage that gives you the right as a secured lien holder to the information on the first. Where should we look for that?
Could you repeat that question one more time?
Yep. So this is Bill Rao saying that in your documentation note or deed, there's supposedly verbiage that gives you the right as a secured lien holder to the information on the first. Where should we look for that? Is there a clause you can lead us to or something in there?
It's in the note, and I can't tell you exactly where it is because it's not going to be in the same place. It's based off of who originated the documents, but that's the other avenue that you can take. And I think I have a written statement that I can share with you guys that you would include on sending to the first or the financial institution who holds the first. And generally where we've seen the most success is we've actually faxed in a copy of our note, copy of our mortgage, a copy of our assignment with the letter. If we know the borrower's account number for the first, if not, their date of birth, social security number, the property address we have for collateral, and send it in requesting that information, and we have gotten it. And then when you're dealing with like places like B of A and Chase, and it could be multiple areas, you basically call into the 1-800 number and see where you would send an authorization or correspondence for them to hunt that down, and wait a couple of days and then follow up and call, and generally you can get the information over the phone.
Very cool. Very cool. I love this. I hope you guys are give us a little comment there in the chat or something that you guys are getting some good value out of this, because this is great. All right, jumping back to this credit report, I know we've gone through kind of their big items when you're looking to underwrite that. Anything else there that just on those top three before you kind of scroll down here?
No.
Okay.
So next you see a Capital One credit card that's pretty much maxed out. And they're paying it on time, so that's something that they actually want. And their credit limit's $5,100 on that particular account, and they've had that account since 04. Again, still showing that there's pride there. I still see pride that they're paying their credit card because they need to be able to put plastic down. And then you go down to the next account. Again, still defining this pride in reference to the Capital One account, where it looks like this is a different Capital One account. This has a limit of $1,500, and it states there's additional lates prior to 6 of 2012, and account is in dispute. So there was some lates that went on. Again, I keep telling you guys that this is a sophisticated borrower, because they've actually put a statement on their credit report that they're disputing the account and the prior lates that aren't showing on the report. So they've paid on time, because you see ones across the board, but during some time of this loan or this line of credit, they were delinquent, and they're disputing that this account was ever late.
Help me understand just a little bit on the trade line six there. Like what do we learn from something like that? It looks like dispute resolved, consumer disagrees. $123,000, would that have been one auto? That's an
one auto loan.
The biggest and best Beamer out there. Very interesting. So they just ended up.
So they say, so the Bureau feels like they're reporting the information correctly. Basically, the borrower then puts a dispute on the credit bureau stating that the consumer disagrees and that they were paying it. But if the dispute was validated and it was incorrect information on the bureau would be forced to take it off and correct the reporting. So you see they went from paying on time. There was 1 month that wasn't reported. Then you go to two. So it went 60, 90, 120. Then it went back to 90, and then it went back to current.
Can you just tell me that one more time where it says where it went from 90 to 120? How do you see that? Maybe I'm not getting that. So I'm on, okay, trade line six there. So I see 6 by 90 plus.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? And then you're saying on top of that there were additional lates. That's where it went 2 by 60.
Additional lates. You see that?
Okay.
411 additional lates.
Gotcha. That's where it went 90 plus.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Any other questions, guys? Type them in. Type them in as we go through this. This can be very interactive. And, I can unmute some of you too as needed. So just type them in there if you've got them, and we'll keep scrolling down here to go through this. So that's just page one. So now we're just kind of going through looking at some, man, it looks like they like to disagree and dispute, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a second car. It looks like these were ones that they ended up turning back in and started fresh.
And started fresh. And they still allow them to to get new loans from BMW Financial, so maybe if you can breathe, you can get a loan from them. You guys keep that in mind. But they were able to get leases. They didn't actually buy the cars outright. They got leases.
That just blows my mind. That blows my mind that they can go and have that poor of a payment history and just go sign up. And not just a regular Beamer, but, you know, so unless they're driving a regular Beamer and their money factor on that lease was just out the roof, you know. So, okay, so Gary had a question. Gary, can you just type in there which trade line you're talking about? So when it says late 6 by 90 plus, what does that mean?
It was 6 times 90 days past due.
Okay, so scrolling up to number 6. Okay, so 6 by 90. So say that one more time. So we got them listed here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
So it says 6 times 90.
Yep, got that. Okay.
And then it gives you the dates, 3-11, 2-11, 1-11, 12-10, 11-10, 10-10.
And then the next, right after that semicolon, 2 by 60, right, additional lates. So that's where you were saying when you, okay, gotcha. Is that helpful? Okay, good. All right. Scroll down. Just tell me what you want. And okay.
Go to the next page, please.
Next page? So skip all this?
No.
Okay. Oh, sorry. This page from the last page I was on. You're getting a delay. Sorry about that. Okay. Homeward Residential.
Okay. So this loan, they paid on time. It was never late. There was a perfect payment history from 12-4 to 12,000 to 2006. There was an Allied First, which really doesn't say anything other than it was an unsecured loan for $9,200. We have an Allied First. Go ahead.
This number 9, I know in the due diligence process and looking at stuff, you know, we'd found another property that they had previously owned out in Orange County because American Airlines, he was working both California and then that kind of, they pushed him back to Dallas. So that would probably be what that was, right? And they eventually, although that may not be it because it sounded like they ended up having to do a short sale on that. So maybe that's coming up here in a minute here, so I'll hold off on that. So, okay, here we go. Scrolling down. So Allied First.
Allied First is unsecured loan. Then we go to Aurora Bank. And you see on here it says foreclosure proceedings started 7 of 2012. And this was for $636,000. And this history, this loan originated on 7 of 07, and the history reported to 7 of 2012. You still can't assume what loan this is for, but the status of the loan is closed.
And you're seeing that right underneath the number 12 line, gotcha.
Mm-hmm. And somewhere they got into trouble. You can't ever say when you see multiple mortgages on a credit report, you can assume that and try to connect the dots, but that's really the worst thing you can do if you're unsure if it belongs to your property or if it belongs to something else. And either if you can pull core logic, you can, you know, you can try to get some of that information. You can try to pull a property profile on the borrowers to see what other properties they own. Or you're going to have to pull title if you really need to know if it's your loan that they're referencing to on the bureau.
Okay, very good. So a couple questions here, Gary. Can you describe, Sabrina, the numbers after the word current? So I'm assuming directly to the right there, the 05, 07, and the, and then also after the, let me scroll up here. He was talking about payment. Okay, there it was. So payment and app. So just even if you go up to Homeward Residential on any of these, see how you got payment and app and then current. There's some numbers afterwards.
Okay, so current means M1 means current. So that's what that means. And it's a mortgage, so that's an M1. Then payment, the last payment was 9/06. And then the term was a 360-month term.
Perfect. And that APP, what does that mean?
I'm not sure because I don't know which bureau that I'm looking at, so I don't know what that is. I don't know what every single abbreviation on the credit reports mean. I'll be honest with you guys and tell you that.
Sabrina, you know, I'm going to need you to step up your game, okay? No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I'll work on that.
Just kidding. So that's great. So if we're looking for that last, you know, people are trying to calculate arrearages and lates,
mm-hmm.
right? Is this payment, let's assume that Homeward Residential just for a minute was our second mortgage or our first, whatever one we're working on, right? That would be our last paid date?
That would be your last paid date, and then the current would be paid to date. So it would be 12/06 or the last time it reported.
Okay, that's huge because I think that's where I know I was confused when we were going through that. So Bill just said, keep it up, Travis, and you'll find yourself in the timeout chair. All right, I'll be quiet. All right, so keep going on that. So that's good. So last paid date, just summarize that for us once more just to, you know, get into our brain.
The last paid date is not always your paid to date. So your last paid date sometimes will differ from the paid to date. You have to remember that.
Okay, so last paid and paid to, and in this case, gotcha. So there's your payment. Very good. Very good. All right, scrolling down, this is great. So at the moment, we have yet to find our second mortgage. We're still looking. Right, so we're coming down. Tell me when to stop. Going on
okay,
to page.
Okay, so you see, I don't know, I can't remember if we talked about the foreclosure proceedings started on 12.
We did not. I don't believe we did. Maybe just summarize it. If we did, they'll get it twice.
So you see on this Aurora mortgage that opened on 7/07, history was reported until 6/2012. It says foreclosure proceedings started. And the loan is actually, it says closed, and it says an M8, so that means that it's a mortgage, and it means repo/foreclosure. So then you go to 13, and you see a $496,000 mortgage. It's a closed account. It's a mortgage. It's over 150 days. It was over 150 days delinquent, and the account was transferred. So that means that loan was sold. Let's go to item number 14, please.
Just before we jump to 14 and we're right there, this is Gary. What's the difference between last paid date versus paid to date? Sounds the same. I know we're backing up, but I think I completely felt like that when I kept hearing that, and I was being asked for that from the, because the servicer gives me this whole spreadsheet to fill out for them. Mm-hmm. When we were boarding loans, it's like, which one's which? And, you know, so maybe just give it to us one more time.
Okay, so your last paid date, your last paid date is December 2nd, 2014. Okay, that's your last paid date.
Now, but which one are we looking at?
I'm giving you an example.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, perfect.
Your paid to date is July 2014. So when you made that payment on December 2nd of 2014, you only advanced till July of 2014 because the loan was already delinquent. Does that make it a little more clear for you, Gary?
I think that's good. And if he's got some more questions, please type them in there for us. Okay, there's a little bit of delay just when he gives us the answer, so very good. Keep typing your questions in, guys. Get ahead of the game when they come, and I'll keep one more time. I'm slow, he says. Okay, give it to him one more time. Put a smiley face if you're joking. If you're not joking, I'm just kidding, Gary. So give it to us one more time so we have it.
Okay. So I'm going to go a step two with this as well. So today is December 2nd, and a borrower makes one payment. And it advances now the pay to date from June 2nd to July 2nd. Because they made a payment, they made enough of a payment to clear one billing bucket. They only made one payment, so they didn't make a payment large enough to cure the entire delinquency to be paid to December 2nd, 2014. So that's part number one. So then say we go to January 2nd, 2015, and the borrower makes a $5,000 payment, and their payment is $1,000 a month. So now it's going to advance their due date to 11/2/2014. Does that make sense on what I just said, Travis?
It does. I've got it. No, that's good. So, and here's Gary, just one last thing. So he's saying, oh, looks like he's got it here. Yes, it makes sense, Bill. He's like, come on, Gary. No, I'm kidding. All right, very good. Kelly has date actually paid. Okay, so date actually paid is the last pay date, and paid to date is what the loan is now current until, question mark?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, very good. All righty, so I'm going to go to page 3, and let's keep going down here and see if we find what we're looking for, which it looks like.
I think number 14 is your mortgage.
So if I go back up here really quick, it looks like with Aurora, and this was the question I always, you know, just wanted some help with, is when you're looking for a purchase money first and second, what's the quickest way to get that, to get that information?
You can't depend on a credit report to tell you that. You cannot, and I'm not going to coach you guys to tell you you can. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, I appreciate that, because I found myself looking, and people say, well, that's not the first place I would start. So on this, so let's actually go, because Bill brings up a good point. How do we determine the pay to date on this credit report? So let's use this Aurora Bank. Let's use this second, and assuming this was the last record we had. It says it was transferred and sold, but let's just look at this one then. It was closed there. M4, delinquent 90.
It was 90 days delinquent at the time. So it was July. And it was due for March at the time. This account was 90 days at the time of reporting.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that there. So it's transferred. So then
it was paid to. It was paid to March of 2009. It would make it due for April 1st of 2009.
Okay. So that's where you're, okay, delinquent as of 3/9. There it is. Okay, so April 2009 would be the next due, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very good. And then in terms of a number where it has that balance, I mean, obviously here, when it says NA, right over to the left there, you've got your balance and then your original loan balance. Right, so the $119,400 was our original loan balance, which we can see here. We can also see from the mortgage or deed of trust. And then when it says NA, if we actually have this information, is it something you've got to, how would you go? Is that where your trial balance from the previous servicer?
That's where your payment histories and your trial balances are very important. If not, you're going to have to go to your note and try to come up with the, based off of the language in the note, on where you would calculate the rate, the interest rate, if you're going to add any points on, or what you're going to do to figure out what the payment is on this account. And sometimes you'll even find the last payment date or the paid to date. On some of the bureaus, it'll tell you that last payment made, and that'll let you know if you're close and you're calculating and figuring, and that's a checks and balance if you want to look at it like that.
Okay. Can you just define for us trial balance?
A trial balance sheet is basically the accounting of your loan history and your payments on your loan.
And is that something, if I'm hiring a servicer, if I forward that over to them, does that minimize the amount of work I have to do? If they're responsible for that, I know. And tell me, like you said before, it's like you got to check and double check, right? Don't rely on them to get it right. But is that, how would you coach us through on that? And that's probably, I'm just sitting here thinking that's probably something where we actually take something like that and take a loan like this and figure out on a call. Maybe you guys can just give me some feedback on there and we could prep that up for, because I know we're an hour in already, but that'd be something, you know, we've had that question come in two or three times on how to calculate arrearages and lates, and maybe we could actually prep that if you guys think that would be a valuable. If that's not valuable to you, then don't type anything in the questions box and let us know that. So, okay, nobody wants to hear about that. So, can you just tell us a few quick things?
Basically, if the loans have been with servicers, one of the value adds on placing your loans with servicers, the servicer, just like the custodian, can track down information and track down missing information. If you have the appropriate servicer, they will do a lot of this work for you. Sometimes they can't always do it, but a lot of times they can, especially if they are familiar with the seller and they know who the prior servicer was or who the original servicer was. They can track down a lot of this information for you. Some of those who are not as experienced servicers will depend on you to complete that documentation, and completing a toss sheet or an information sheet for a servicer is enough to make you just quit the note business before you even start.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Okay, so tell me this, Sabrina. I know you and I had spoken prior to the training call. I know we wanted to, you know, continue to deconstruct this particular file, and it looks like we are getting some feedback here, which I knew we would, of people just doing a session on how we calculated arrearages. And I know we were going to continue through the collateral file review and also the hardship package and really break down this particular loan. Do we want to adjourn and continue on with that next week? I probably should, in the interest of time. This has been a great little session. I think we can do that. So let me just do this. Any thoughts there?
We can pick up where we left off, and I'm even going to, we can do it, because I'll be in the office next Tuesday, and we can, Monica and I can be in the same place at the same time. And we can actually do a buddy system in reference to how you guys calculated the arrearages and came up with the past due payments. That's fine.
Okay, so really quick, if you guys have any other questions, just go ahead and type them in there. But one thing just to end today, so I that was huge for me, and that's something, you know, I've sat through little pieces and chunks here and there on reviewing a credit report, and just each time, you know, got a little nugget each time. But that was like a total immersion. I think the best we've had so far in a credit report. So I appreciate you taking the time to do that. And I know that was something that, you know, both you and Aaron had thought would be of great value to the group. And I agree. And it looks like everyone also feels the same. So, okay. So just in closing here, guys, before I let you jump off, you guys know we have our summit coming up. And that's it's a real big goal for us to. I mean, it's a big goal, and we're excited about that goal. But that is our goal, to host the most outstanding annual networking and deal making event in the passive income and note investing space. And we just feel like a lot of great things can come out of that for each of you, and for us, and for Capstone Funding Group as a group. And so one thing that we're very excited about. A lot of you have registered for the referral program, and I just want to, you know, to hit that goal, this just give you the three things that we really need to accomplish that goal. And we feel like if you guys as a group come across somebody that you feel could deliver great value to our not only our funding group and this co-invest group, but to attendees at NIS Live in February, please pass them on to us. We're in contact with a lot of people. We feel like between our panel sessions, our hot seats, you know, and a specific content presenter who's a practitioner in the business, they're doers. We think we've got a star-studded lineup, and we continue to add to it. We just are in final talks with a keynote speaker that we think is going to be very, very valuable to give us a feel for the economic landscape, you know, in the coming months and years, and, you know, how long we might see what we're seeing in the note space. So anyway, please pass that on to us. The second thing that we really need are some of the most outstanding sponsors, vendors, and service providers. And so we've obviously connected. We've been at a couple of different industry events, and we continue to attend events, and we're connecting with these people. But again, if you know of somebody that you feel would be a great sponsor or a vendor service provider that could be there, they're actually the ones, I don't know if any of you guys have seen, between Aaron and Ben, they did a great job on our sponsor info pack, and they're helping us. We've passed that on to a lot of people, and we're having a lot of people come on board as sponsors, and they're going to help us keep our ticket prices low. We moved up to the Hilton Mission Bay, and it's quite a bit more money to put on an event there. And but we're excited about it. We think it's going to be a great venue, and we're seeing a lot of people. So the last thing we need, obviously, and I think 80 to 85% of you guys in the co-invest group have already registered for NIS Live, and I'll just tell you really quick, just so we reiterate it here on the recording, it's $297 if you're in the co-invest group to come to NIS Live, and that's a VIP ticket. So if you go to the website right now, it's actually, John just put the VIP ticket. You know, a lot of people have been taking the VIP option, and we just don't have as much room as we'd like, so we probably only have about 30 VIP slots left between now and the event. But you guys, everyone in the group comes with that. So if you haven't done that, just get in touch with us, shoot us an email, and that's for you and one other guest would both be VIPs at that price. And we really thank the world, you guys, and want you guys to come, and you are our VIPs. So a lot of you guys are part of the founders group from that original session, the first 10 members in the group, and we really appreciate that. So our goal is to have 300 minimum, and that's not counting sponsors and speakers. That's actually people. So, you know, it says almost 100 with 90 days to go, and that was before our webinar. So we actually cracked. We're at 106, and we just would love your help. So just with that being said, we'll close this at the end. If you have not already, this is my picture. I love you guys can see this. This was in our NIS manual, but this is our share the love picture. You know, bring a friend, talk to a friend, and you know, we feel that we're going to do our very best to put on a great event. So I'd encourage you guys, if you haven't already, the link is get, and I'll put this on the screen. I didn't have it up for the slides, but you'll see that's where we're at right now. And those prices go up between now and the end of the year. And so if you know people, we're going to be giving you some emails that you guys can actually just send out, and they'll have an affiliate link if you've already registered with that. So let me just see here on some questions. We've got any other questions here. So we'll get Igor. We will do that. We'll do more. We review more problematic credit reports. That was a pretty problematic credit report, my friend. But we'll get some other problematic credit reports too, so that's great. So very good. And we'll do that. We'll work on that, Kelly. Keep reminding us on that cheat sheet. That's great. So anyways, guys, let me just see if there's one other thing we had on here. Obviously, there's the venue. If you guys, just in talking about the hotel, if you guys, all of the networking receptions, VIP dinners and sessions, you know, it's just great. One of the things we try to have everyone do, if you're able to stay at the hotel, that's very helpful. You know, that just is a big deal for us, as we've, you know, we actually, as organizers of the event, we've just guaranteed a certain number of sleeping rooms for the hotel, and we think we'll meet it quite easily, but it's a beautiful venue. I've said this before, but I took one for the team and took my family down there to check it all out. It'd be great if you guys end up coming in, you know, either a day earlier or a day later to stay. Bring your family. This is a beautiful resort, and February is a beautiful time in San Diego. So any other questions? Whoops. Any other questions that we have before we let you guys go for the day? Any other comments, Sabrina?
No.
Okay. Well, we will continue on this exact file, breaking down the rest of things for next week's training. And if you've got anything else, just shoot us an email. And until then, just check in with us if there's anything else we can do to serve you guys. That's what we're here to do, and hopefully you found today's content valuable. And we will see you next week. We probably will be doing a webinar again to be able to do that, so, and better show you some of the actual documents we're going to be going through. So we will talk to you next week. Thanks so much.